Oh, I've got this ID selected, and then so I can right click and then show function definition, and it will jump right to that file because I'm in Visual Studio.
In WYSIWYZ.
Hey there, Shopping Maniacs! You're listening to another coffee-fueled episode of the Shop Talk Show? What's our website show called?
Definitely Shop Talk Show. It sounds like you're a little... Were you doing something else before this?
Chris, can I just... Can you come down to my level here? Here, everyone take a knee. Take a knee here. You know when you join a project and you jump in and you get like you're just kind of handed a piece of code and it's like good luck, bye. I'm actually going on vacation, so I'll see you. how do you begin to dissect and understand that code? Because what I'm kind of dealing with right now is like the untangling the Rat King. You know, it's all good code. I don't want to like slide it, but you know, just like, okay, this function or this variable is, you know, it's the values are created by this function. Oh, this function is where? Oh, it's in a different file. Okay, now I go to this file, and then, you know, how do you, like, when you jump into a project, how do you untangle
the mess, or
make sense of
things. We've been doing a classic more pairing than we normally do at CodePen, or at least in the last couple of weeks, I've been enjoying. And one of the side effects of that is that you get to like live through somebody else's brain, whoever's like driving at the moment, kind of, and that's interesting. And that I found that different of us on that team have different ways of untangling that mess. Not that it's ever a mess. It's always very organized haystack. and I found that...
No one writes messy code.
No one. And that there's some... There's at least two types of people in the world, and I suspect that there's 10. We found that I matched with someone in that one of the ways to like be like, okay, where is this piece of code? What's the relevant stuff here? Because we needed to find an input, and then when there was like, you know, key downs and stuff in that input, it would do some stuff and it would hit one API and we needed to change it to a different API. We needed to like massage the data that was coming back from the API anyway, you know, day-to-day crap. And to find it, two of us had the exact same way to do it, and we like basically opened up DevTools and like found the ID of the input because something probably, you know, there's something identifying about that input in the DOM that will allow us to then find in project to find out where it is, at least in a view, and then the view will have clues as to what controllers it's a part of and crap like that, you know?
So you looked at the visual output, you web inspected it, you grabbed input, ID, like, whatever, credit card, MasterCard 2, you grip the code base for MasterCard 2.
And that'll get you to the view, and then you end up, you know, hopefully you're using a nice code editor or something. You know, Rachel was driving, so she's like, okay, I got this, and then I see that it's calling
an Australian accent.
Yeah.
If you're in her brain.
I've got this ID selected, and then so I can right click and then show function definition, and it will jump right to that file. I'm in Visual Studio. I'm ruining it. That was definitely a male version of it. But anyway, we were similar in that respect, but her, you know, her code editor setup is great. So I think in the end, you got 5-6 files open and tabs that are all like related to this thing that you're working on. So it like, oh, it starts here and it goes to here and it goes to here and it goes to here. But it started at the view. Whereas then Alex, we were doing like a 3-way pairing thing. He was like, I think I remember what file it is. So I'm going to literally dig through the sidebar of files here and just find it. Because his brain like has the code base structure mapped out, and I
was it. Sorry, just for nuance, this was a Rails project.
It was
React base.
It's both actually, because Rails was doing the data stuff, and which I guess maybe complicates it a little bit. But we're using this new thing called Webpacker, which is it's just like, do you have a code base that's Rails, and you also need to use React, or not necessarily React, but something that uses Webpack. It allows those worlds to kind of coexist. So it's all one today.
Rails, Webpack, Asset Pipeline, Gem Install. Got it.
It literally does use the Asset Pipeline, sadly enough. I shouldn't say that. It doesn't, I don't have anything.
I like Asset Pipeline. I'm about to roll it out on my blog.
A little slow.
Okay. Yeah, a little bit. Because it still uses Ruby.
So two ways to untangle a code base. One is just look through all the files. Another is just like find clues and follow the breadcrumb trail. How did you do it?
Well, so I wouldn't say I'm done yet. I get the repo and I'm kind of like, I was trying to do it like they had it online, like in a GitHub kind of thing where you could browse it, you know, and I was like, and I was doing it that way, and that was just really painful, you know, and I just was like, I gotta pull this down, and I went into Visual Studio Code, because Visual Studio Code has some function, but it, it has IntelliSense, you know, so you can like hover a thing and it's like, okay, this has a string, you know, like it shows you the definition of what it was before. And if you have like TypeScript or anything rolling through it, or it kind of actually tries to like do TypeScript, like it expects a string and, you know, or anything, you know, so that's kind of helpful, but I'm still just kind of struggling. Like, I think like at some point you try this like cherry pick, like grep through. And then at some point, I think you just have to like read the file. And what I'm trying to, why I was late to this podcast today is I actually just started like writing my own comments. Like, cause not every function, you know, like get foo is not documented because everyone who works on the code base knows what get foo does. But in my brain, I'm just like, you know, I'm going to like write out what get foo is and why and kind of like walk just for me being like me. I think I just need to like verbally explain it or visually, I guess, explain what's happening. Just because I just find it's like this, or what I really want, and I don't know if this is actually good. I almost want like a thread, like I can like see like little strings or something, like mapping how this all kind of ties together, you know? I'm sure that would be very awful UI in general.
It is. So here's a thought. So you had to do all this, like, I don't know, there's some commenting involved, but I imagine there's also some like console.logging, or if it's server side, like whatever the server side.
Yeah. Just like, you get like the log and you're like, okay, what are you, buddy? And then you're like, okay,
what do you do with that? Who has an elegant solution to that? Cause sometimes I'll add in like a string of console.logs that span five different files because I'm trying to follow the breadcrumbs and see what the data is at each point.
Mm-hmm.
Is that dumb? Because really you should be a dev tools master and you should be able to like set breakpoints within dev tools and sniff your way out there. Or B, like, what? Okay, let's say I've done it and I'm happy and I didn't use dev tools. I just used console.logs, etc. in my code base. Then I got to remove them all. I got to remember to remove them all. And if it's like kind of a hefty commit, it's easy to forget a couple. And so how many commits are there in our code base that's like removing console.log? Because it's just embarrassing. You know, people don't need to see that in a production site. Why can't you leave them there? Like, isn't there some, I mean, is it practical to have a build step that just pulls out all console.logs? Or do you have to comment them? Because commenting them is fine, but then uncommenting them is annoying.
Well, what's weird about console.log is you want console.log before you set the variable and then after you set the variable,
right?
Like almost every time, right? Like you want the, like, I always do like saving or like I'm here exclamation point comma variable I'm
Me
trying
too.
To do.
Yeah,
and then you're like, and then you're like, or before and then after, you know, and you're just
so
trying
it's right
to like
at the top of a function too, like, you know, what did I get? I need to see the raw thing that I got. And then like towards the bottom of the function, like, all right, did you do what you said you were going
to
do?
Yeah. I need to see what I got. And then I need to see what came out. And, you know, and you can use like debugger, you know, but that actually is worse to leave in because that like stops your app for your, you know, for people who have, I guess, who have dev tools open. But like, you know, Yeah, I don't know that there's a great thing. I'm sure you can get like some kind of linter or some kind of, you know, thing.
I guess the question is, why isn't it more common? Doesn't that seem like a really common scenario that should be like a hot topic, but just isn't?
Yeah, you'd think like just data inspection on the fly or whatever. You know, one thing I wish I could do is just like, I don't know, like add a symbol, like a three at signs or something in front of a line of code and be like, whatever this does to log this out.
You know, oh, like, there you go. Developer ergonomics. I like it. Yeah. Just some kind of I don't know.
Just cause you like, you always like write a new line and then you like copy paste, you know, but it's just like, or whatever. I don't care. Just show me what this effing thing does. You know, maybe that's the debugger, you know, or whatever, but, gosh, I would love something like that, but,
clever. Okay. So that's that. So you're untangling this mess and you're probably a console.logger. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm console logging, but this like this one's different. I'm just in this particular project, cause every project has got its own things, right? Like I'm kind of like taking code from one thing and replicating it in another. You think of like, or I did this yesterday with like something totally different, but it was like, you know, I had some code for like accessible pop-ups, you know, like where you click a thing and a little pop-up shows up, right? And I was like, okay, now I'm going into my sub-navigation. Well, sub-navigation is a pop-up, but it just looks different, right? It's just showing a nested list instead, but they're a little bit different. So, okay, so I like mapping this over to here and I knew that code, so it was fine. But when you're like, when you're new to the code base, you're like, what does this do? Like, that's kind of the thing is like,
I've never thought of it that way. So is it, I mean, I don't mean to derail you here, but like, is that how you think of a pop-up that way? So you can't like leave until you hit escape or something. You're trapped inside the subnav until you,
well, no, it's kind of more like you can like keyboard trap things on like a pop-up, but I think ideally you wouldn't, you know, like you want people to escape it or leave it. And then, but yeah, it's a subnav is basically the underlying control is Aria has pop-up and you like say, oh, okay, this has a pop-up. It is currently not expanded. And you're like, okay, cool. If, you know, if you just close your eyes and listen, you're like, cool, I'll hit like spacebar or enter to like expand it. And then I'll go kind of tab through the next little section, you know, but that's the thing with accessibility, or at least I'm learning, or I'm still learning, after 20 something years, but they're different enough to like warrant different components, but they share a lot of code, but you can't like, but because it's like very DOM oriented, you know, it's like setting attributes and properties and stuff like that, you can't really recycle it. So it's sort of, I don't know, difficult,
yeah,
but
yeah. I can see how there's so many developers out there that are frustrated at to the point where their opinion is, oh my God, what a mess. I should be eating this for free.
I'm doing I'm doing a talk at an event apart, this summer. I think it's sort of in the works. So if it doesn't happen, I apologize and I lied and it's not anyone's fault. It's about accessibility and building your own components. And I think one of the kind of key points I want to like say sort of the end, it's again, a tangled mess, but, of ideas, but it's just that I think like every developer should know how to build their own accessible components, period. However, I think no developer should have to code their own accessible components, period. However, if you don't code your own accessible components, what happens when somebody shows up and is like, oh, I want, you know, when you click the body, that thing should close, you know, do you know how to fix that or do that? You know, I think that's like the, you know, I think that, and that goes back to knowing how to make accessible components. Like, I think there's like this, kind of a vicious circle of like, you need to know it, but we really shouldn't have to know it. It should just be done, but we need to know how it works in case like we mess it up or we get another requirement. So we, you know, it's kind of it's interesting. I think that's going to be kind of the, sort of confusing, deflating crescendo, which I like to do in my talks, you know,
Can't wait.
Like you should know. Yeah, exactly. I know everyone's fired up about it, but it's just that you should know how to do it. But you don't, ideally in a world, you don't have to do it. And there are some things coming out in HTML. You know, I don't know if you maybe posted on it, the details, right? Details and summary.
There was a Keith Grant article that was really popping the last couple of days that I have not read yet.
Like details is like on the list. Dialogue is coming or has like kind of picked up on traction. Focus ring is kind of in the or it's now called focus visible, I think. So like, you know, that old problem where you tab and you get a blue outline on a button after you click it, or that, you know, you set a focus state or you don't override focus. And you have like a blue outline on all your buttons after you click them. That's ugly. So there's going to be a new one that's only keyboard focus, like focus visible. You set only keyboard focus. So you can say like focus, like colon focus or star colon focus outline none. And then you like star colon focus visible outline one pix blue or whatever glow or whatever it is. So focus visible is going to be what we want. So for keyboard focusing. But anyway, so there's a few things coming out that'll make accessibility better and more easier, but I keep coming down to like, we need like an accordion element and a tabs element or GTFO, you know?
I guess the accordion is just a generic sense of toggle ability, which is sort of the, what's the toggle one? I should be fired.
Details summary.
Yeah.
Details summary.
Oh my God.
Or, yeah.
That's like honestly on my list pattern of things to talk about today, possibly, was the just, so I'm building a website, Dave. You know, I'm building a couple of them. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, just little like.
I do that.
One offers, though. Like, whole team, big life changing website, but just like a little guy. And it's just a couple of times lately. I don't know if it's just the fact that I'm still adjusting to having a daughter and the. That mm-hmm. world, or if I'm just a bad web developer, all of a sudden is like, oh, the simplest things. I'm like, I don't know how to do this anymore. I had to flop out a background image on an element every 0.2 seconds or something, just like toggle back and forth. You know, like you're making like a fake carrot or something for a text editor. That wasn't the case. This was just a little aesthetic thing that I wanted to do. Just flop it back and forth, and I'm like, I don't know. I can't figure it out. I was like this is a keyframe animation, right? Because it needs to continuously run, not on any event or anything. And I think you're supposed to use steps for that, right? Because it has exactly two steps. So steps two, and then, but like the steps was like halfway putting in between my keyframes. And I just was having the worst brain fart ever. I'm like, this should be the simplest thing ever. And the answer is, it turns out there's totally a way to do it. It actually is a little convoluted, so I don't totally blame myself. Thank God Una Kravitz just happened to be nearby, and I was just like, can you help me? and it's the old, like, you set up, like, keyframes, like, 0 to 50% and then 51% to 100% or whatever, so you need 4 keyframes to just do a stupid toggle. But anyway, it was just like, I feel like that used to be my bread and butter. Like, I have a website called CSS Tricks. I feel like my card should be revoked, you know? But the general concept being, you know, you stay good at what you do all the time, you know? It's just had been a while since I've had to write something like that. So it just was so far from my brain.
Yeah. No, I think that's like, I think that's a big thing, you know? I think like we all bear like a lot of shame, like, oh, I don't know how to do this. But it's like, it's not that you don't know how to do it, it's just you haven't been doing it. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know if you picked up on this last week, but when we recorded the show, I was working on a React project and it just wasn't happening, you know? Like, I didn't get the code and I'm just like, welp, had a good run, guys. I don't know. I'm going to go like work at a school and like plunge toilets. I don't even know. Like, I just was like, I don't know how to code and I'm done and like washed up because React is too difficult for me. And I was like, this is not good. But then after we recorded this show, I like sat there and, you know, kind of again, like did that dig through the problem thing, dig through the code. And like I had an unlock moment like an hour and a half later, and I just was like, okay, like that, like almost like the aha moment when you kind of start understanding JavaScript. It was kind of like that, but it was just like the code started making sense and how it goes together and what React kind of expects before it like barfs out that you did it wrong. And then I just was like, okay, I think I got this. And then by like the end of the day, I was like, I am a golden god. I am the best code man in the world. And so I think like, you know, and not to be too sentimental or whatever, but like, you know, you're probably not getting the best sleep, or like, you know, you're busy and, you know, you quit work and you go, you know, back to changing diapers and feeding kids and trying to get cat naps and stuff like that. And so like, you know, that's like what Eric Meyer, like the design for real life, Eric and Sarah Watcherbitcher, like, I think like that's kind of the thing, is like, you're not in the best, you're not in a crisis state, but you're not in the like most like chill, laxative, like open thinking state, you know? Like, so, but yeah, I think you also need to like temper, like, okay, I don't understand it now, but you know, try to figure out, I don't know.
Sometimes it may take a while. Context switch just to like let my own brain figure something else out. But like, there's definitely cost to that too. I regularly think about, and it just was coming up in some Twitter threads today about that Sophie Shepard article about the cost of context switching. It's like, sometimes it's helpful and that you have to, because I don't know, something happened in your life. You have no choice but to switch what you're doing right now to something else. But if you do that eight times a day, you can just feel stress. And the stress isn't from many of those eight things. It's the fact that you switched between them that's causing the stress.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was my thing. I think last year, and Sophie's article actually came out like right as I was thinking of it, and we can post a link. What is Sophie's, Sophie
Shepherd? The road to burnout is paved with context switching.
Yes, the road to burnout is paved with context switching. And if you look in her URL, the original title was Learning to Be Chill. So, which I like, but it's like she just does a great job explaining, you know.
Everybody should customize their URLs like this too. If it feels like an XKCD thing where like half the joke is buried in the alt text, you know, like the blog post, I feel like you should always rock a joke in the URL if you possibly can.
Yeah. So I think she broke down like, oh, here's all the things I do, you know, I'm thinking, communicating, coaching, designing, you know, and then she was like, how can I, instead of doing this in like a cycle of like 15 times a day, random tasks, how can I like set up my week to like, to bucket these contexts so that I don't just go crazy, like trying to meet all these needs and shift things. And for me, it was the same thing, you know, it's like, okay, I'm a pattern library and I'm focusing like down to the molecule or the atom, you know, I'm doing the button, you know, and I'm making sure the button is the right button. And then it's like, okay, I got a meeting and one in the meeting is about a Rails app. Okay, cool. I got to go do the Rails app. Like I got to go, okay, Ruby on Rails. Okay. This is different. You know, like, the like zooming in and out for me. And then I was even doing like pattern library stuff. It was like doing browser compat, like back through time, you know? And I just was like, oh, my brain, dude, like that context switching, like going from like, okay, I'm looking at this button and now I'm looking at this button through time. And then now I'm working on a Rails project. It was like, it was really burning me out. And I just kind of like, I finally was like, you know, I do Rails on one day, like this day is the day I do the Rails thing, or 2 days or whatever, and then I'm doing the pattern library over here. And but even then I was like, I was trying to get things done, and then I was getting bug reports like, oh, this doesn't work in IE9, and it was like, oh, okay, this doesn't work in IE9, gotta go back. Okay, hey, yeah. So
I find just in a 10% related or more, I know myself, and that I'm not effective when I have to combine the designing aspect ever with the coding aspect of it. Coding wise, I'm happy to switch back and forth between HTML and CSS and JavaScript and any backend languages I need, because they're all just different tabs of the same environment, and that's okay. I mean, maybe ideally I would scope those down a little bit too, but if I have to be switching between those contexts and then switch over to a design program to like move things around and pick colors and stuff, it's possible, but the result is just going to be garbage comparatively too.
Yeah, no, I'd love to read more about how people cope or whatever. I think it's tough.
Because of course, you know, the goal is low stress, but it's also higher quality work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the more you communicate with people, that's part of it too, is like the better your product's going to be, you know, like whether that's talking to customers or talking to your team internally, like you're going to, but like, again, that's like another context. So like you know, how do you take all this stuff and funnel it into good work? That's kind of difficult stuff. So
this show is sponsored in part by HelloSign, HelloSign.com. Maybe you've used them because somebody sent you a document electronically to sign. You can sign through HelloSign, literally your signature, a legally binding signature. They're the real deal. It's so awful when somebody sends you a thing that's like, print this out and then sign the thing that you print out and then scan it and then send me back like a crooked, crappy JPEG of the thing that you signed and then we'll print it out and put it. Ugh. No, if this feels like the future, it feels like the way things are supposed to be. You send me a document, I can sign it right on my computer, send it back to you in 2 seconds. There's no like 5 weeks of me groaning and trying to find a printer and all that stuff. No, it's fast, it's beautiful, it's great. That's what HelloSign does. Best in the business for that kind of thing. You can do all that stuff on HelloSign.com. Send people to HelloSign, have them do the thing. Or you can use their API to embed documents directly on your website, like a total white label kind of thing. And have people work that way. So like, why do you even need this? Maybe you're a lawyer and there's like, you know, clients that need to have things signed. Maybe you're a realtor and they need to sign things. You're an HR department, you have new hires, you're onboarding, you need their signatures for things. There's all kinds of reasons you'd need a signature. Have them do it right on your own site. Really nice experience. It's the same kind of thing of like why payment APIs have, you know, like never leave my website to check out is a much more seamless, nice experience. That's like HelloSign. Never leave the site. Get the signatures right there. They have all these great integrations too. You can send somebody an email and there's a sign button in Gmail and you click it and open up and they sign the document without ever leaving Gmail. How awesome is that? Same thing with Google Docs and Evernote. And they have all these great integrations too. This is the HelloSign API. Follow the show note link to go to it and check it out. It's really pretty cool. Thanks, HelloSign.
This one is super related from George Jetson here, so we might as well just slip into it real quick before moving on. But he's basically asking about the time and kids thing, which is just kind of almost a FAQ level thing here at Job Talk. What are some tips and tactics to get better at front-end engineering while trying to raise kids? I find it nearly impossible between unpaid overtime at work, the commute, and dealing with young children. Mr. Rupert is apparently doing this and maintaining peak relevance. What a compliment, eh? And how do you do it? And what are some tactics that you employ to keep relevant? My quick one would be, George, if you're already working, I'm sorry about the unpaid overtime, but I suspect that you are getting better at front-end engineering.
Yes. Twist. Yes. I mean... sort of what we were talking about before, like, you know, if you're just doing the same old thing, like building the same WordPress theme over and over and over, you're kind of, I guess, window of exposure to new technologies.
Sure. I'd still argue that you're still getting better. You're getting, you know, you can experiment with your workflow and abstracting things because you've done it more than once and stuff. Maybe your like return on investment of time is a little lower than like a totally new technology kind of thing, but still digging in a little bit doesn't hurt. Anyway, go on.
And that's not a dig on WordPress. Gutenberg's going to change everything and we'll all be right.
I think we're going to do a whole show on it, weirdly enough, because it's not like the WordPress podcast, but it is. So I think I'm just fascinated by it. So anyway, we'll do that later.
Yeah. But I think your window of exposure to new things is kind of low. So how do you kind of open up that window to new things? Last year, 2017, I picked up a gigantic YouTube habit, like an embarrassing YouTube while working habit. Hmm. And your job may not support that, I understand, but I work from home. So, but I wrote a post about four YouTube channels for web developers. You can check that out. But these are kind of like just a couple subscriptions, and people like left more in the comments. But it's Coding Train with Dan Schiffman.
Yeah,
it's amazing because he does processing JS a lot. He does other things too, so you should subscribe to
see P5 and stuff. I mean, I feel like people probably watch him just because they like his vibe. I like his vibe. He's awesome.
It's a great vibe, but he also is like it's almost like computer science, because P5JS is very much like, how do we take, you know, how do we kind of like sample data or generate thing data and then kind of draw it out, you know? And it's cool and it's visual. I think it's really good place to learn. Fun Function is another with Matthias Petter Johansson, and he's old Shopify, but now he's kind of doing YouTube full time. But it is so fun. It's just like very energetic. It's like, it's like 100% caffeine, and it's really good for like learning, like when you don't want to learn something, but you want to like see something.
So wouldn't you put all this in
something?
This passive learning category? I quite like it too. You know, like I even have like a stupid tab open that's like the 50 best TED Talks for design and development, or whatever. It's not like I need to 100% engage with it. I don't have my code editor open and stuff when I watch this. You just soak it in, and you soak it in just like, instead of watching Mindhunter episode 5, you just like switch over to YouTube for a minute and watch that. At least in my perfect world, I like that. Sometimes, you know, if I'm sitting there with my wife, she'd be like, no. But if I have she's like anti learning or anything, but it's like, that's not, she's not interested in that. I'm sure she has her own hobbies and stuff that she wouldn't mind watching random crap for. But right, we compromise on Mindhunter or whatever.
Yeah, she doesn't want to sit on the couch with you while you like just blast a YouTube video about at 2x about how to like whatever unit test or whatever. Yeah. She doesn't,
even though I can enjoy like things like that recreationally almost. I enjoy nerding out like that. Not that if you don't out there, anybody, don't feel bad about that. It's almost over.
Yeah, that's okay.
Just a related thing. I saw Firefox released like a labs kind of thing in which they have the like PNP or whatever it is. Like you can pop out a video and then it's just the video floating around your desktop only.
Yeah,
and so I think Safari has it. And so, I mean, it's just now everybody but Chrome kind of has that. And I think that's great, especially if you have a nasty YouTube habit, having that little tiny window that you can tuck away in a corner on your desktop is pretty rad.
Yeah. And Edge buddies.
Real hey. Good.
Picture in picture. There's even a overlay context inside Windows 10. Come on, get with it. Anyway,
what does that mean?
It's like just it's Windows's picture in picture API or whatever. But yeah, like I think the passive learning. Google has another one. Like Google developer or Chrome developer channel is really good because it's just very like they do really good like 2 minute videos, like bite sized pockets of updates, Tully tooling tips,
right.
HTTP 203.
They're killing it. I think that's smart of browsers to invest in that kind of thing because it's a big deal. And I just saw yesterday Jen Simmons has a brand new one called Layout Land on YouTube.
Yes,
which is already popping. And that's great. That's Mozilla investing in their developer evangelist. I don't know if that's technically Jen's job title or not, but she's all over the place in the Mozilla, you know, talking to people about the possibilities of design thing. It's just so cool. I just like to see it.
No, I think it's good content. And I think with the browsers, it's at a good place, you know, you can be an independent creator and do things, but that's like harder. If you wanted like a more formal education, Wes Boss's courses I've found are good. Like I went through his ES6 course, just because I just was like, okay, I know Java, like most of ES6, like it's going into my work and exiting my work, but I just was,
I'm just Dave, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey, spread that operator. I just was like, I'm a person who like, okay, I've sucked up a few bits. Now I need to like see what the whole picture is. Like, I've collected a bunch of pennies and now I need to see a dollar bill to know what money actually looks like or something. That's terrible enough.
No,
but it's
from that, or what popped into my mind, is that I don't know. I get ES6-2 for the most part, except for sometimes when I see it being used so heavily that when I see the whole dollar bill, as you put it, I'm like, oh my God, I don't get it anymore.
When you see the dollar bill, we're leaning into this analogy big time. But when you see the whole like ES6 thing, I'm just like, is this WebAssembly? I don't know. Did we all switch? Like, cause I don't know what this is anymore. And I'm just confused. And there's a bunch of arrows and I don't know what this is. And you quit writing functions. We quit writing the word function now. if you have a class, you can do that. But like, I just was like, oh man, like what is life even now? And, so I think, like, you know, kind of seeing the whole picture really helps. And, I found Wes Boss to be, it's
well,
money.
Speaking of Mr. Wes,
so Wes, and you should pay me, but.
And Jen's new, you know, layout land thing that just dropped today. I think it was, I mean, you'll be listening to this in, you know, 4 or 5 days from now. So you won't be getting it on day one if you're hearing about it from us, but he's got a brand new course also sponsored by Mozilla. So I guess lots of rounds of applause for Mozilla about CSS Grid. So it's cssgrid.io, cool domain, and it's totally free. So watch those videos. There's a lot of courses on Grid, but you know, a lot of people really like Wes's style. So you can't, you probably won't go wrong. 4 hours, 25 videos, totally free, paid for by Mozilla. Clap, clap, clap. Let's say something bad about Mozilla just for fun, you know?
Mozilla needs to support HTML imports. They ruined it. Thanks, Mozilla.
So here's another one. This is fun. Like, I'm not trying to like take stuff away, but I saw a couple of people link to this blog post just last week or this week. I guess it was January 15th. So a couple days ago, the title of the blog post, Secure Context Everywhere. Let me see if I can read this. Effective immediately, all new features that are web exposed are restricted to secure contexts. All new features that are web exposed are to be restricted to secure contexts. Web exposed means that the feature is observable from a web page or server, whether that's through JavaScript, CSS, HTTP, media formats, etc. What that says is, and how people are interpreting this, is there's a brand new feature in CSS, like border radius 2. That was bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You won't see it over HTTP. Your website better be HTTPS, or that CSS feature doesn't work. Which everybody I saw link to this is like, what? Why? Yeah. That is weird. Everybody's all about HTTPS. I've never met somebody that's like, screw HTTPS. That's bad for the internet. Maybe a couple of weirdos here and there. I can see being mad at HTTPS occasionally, because when it breaks on your website, which is all too easy, it's very frustrating, and it's just not as simple as not having HTTPS, clearly. But everybody, for the most part, is on board with it. But to force people into it to use a new feature of CSS is hog wild.
Yeah, hopefully it's easy to make a SSL SSL certificate for localhost domains. Just kidding, it is not.
No, I mean, I struggle with it regularly. just yesterday, we'll I was sitting goes. Around with Alex, and he's, you know, was firing up our dev environment on a different computer for a while, and it was just mega frustrating to get to go. And we use .dev domains, and we were not affected by the .dev Chrome bonanza. I know it didn't affect you because you're on Edge anyway, but they decided to HSTS all that. What was confusing to me about that is HSTS is like this thing that like is built into the browser that's just like, this website only works on HTTPS. Don't even try to use HTTP because there's some kind of upgrade attack that's relevant to that. So if you're in HSTS or you use that, then you're like safe from that attack, which is kind of cool. The problem, I thought it was by domain, but in some way they like every single .dev domain this applies to for some reason, which I don't totally understand. But the idea is, if you work on localhost and you made up a domain name like mywebsite.dev, which 80% of the world did, I feel like, on localhost, it had to be HTTPS or it would like break on Chrome. But we work on HTTPS locally anyway, so it was like fine, whatever. But that was kind of a questionable Google move for sure.
No, yeah, no. Google had, not to chastise them, but they've made a few moves here. Like they changed the padding on buttons, like the default padding on buttons. Did you see that?
Oh, I missed that one.
It was really weird. All of a sudden, people are like, my buttons don't fit the website anymore because they like changed padding, like the default padding or whatever. So anyway.
Shouldn't there be like a board, you know, where you like go to town hall and it's like, you know, like the beginning of whatever. So long and thanks for all the fish. What's that book? You know, the
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, they bulldoze his house and like, what? You didn't see the posting on your intergalactic message board or whatever? There should be some kind of like internet message board that's like, warning, come January, the buttons are going to change a little bit. Be warned.
Yeah, giant like klaxon in my office that's like, about to do some bullshit.
I hate to, you know, and I hate to like, I'm not an important person in the world, but it probably wouldn't hurt to like tell me. Because if I got an email from Google that said like on January 15th, button padding is going to change, we had to do it for these reasons, I would help spread the word.
Yeah. No. Oh man, it would be, yeah, it'd be very helpful. Just for like, kind of like, hey, heads up, this is changing. And there probably are like little things, but like, yeah, like ping.
Maybe
ping
it just people. Slipped out. One time we had a branch that slipped out where we used like WebKit text smoothing or whatever the heck that thing is, you know, and it kind of like thins out. It depends on what kind of monitor you have, but I think on some Retina displays, it makes the text look really thin. It was totally an accident because I kind of don't like it. And I just feel like it's a weird proprietary property. It has some performance implications and stuff. And I just wasn't ready for that to ship, you know, just, but it slips out. So I bet that happens at every shop, you know, maybe somebody just was playing around with the old user agent style sheet. And it just kind of slipped
the
into
old
the really
UA style sheet fix got mixed in with the fetch protocol 8.2 resolve. So
that'll happen.
Who hasn't done that? Who hasn't done that? No, it's tough. We could probably do a whole show on like how to flight like features and stuff like that. Cause we were talking about that. God, we're like one question in. We were talking about that at Paravel the other day, you know, like somebody's like, or it was just like, it would be really good. Like we should version this, you know, I think everyone was like, yeah. And then we were like, well, but a lot of the requests are kind of like, could you just show me like this thing? And you're like, oh yeah, we could like build that out. And like, so we build it out, we put it up, and then people are like, cool, thanks. And they like disappear for months, you know? And you're like, well, was that like a new version? What was that? like somebody just asked for something. Do we have to like, are we accountable for that? Or are they going to come back and change their mind? You know, like we're just kind of, and ideally you do that in like a feature branch, but then it's like deploying feature branches. What do? You know, like, do you really snap a whole branch and set up a whole new server just for like, can you make that text like pink? You know, like does that, you know, like, you should probably make a feature branch called pink text or whatever, but like, do you like create a whole new deployment, a whole new URL thing? And then like 8 months down the line, you're like, well, I'm going to delete the pink text branch because that obviously didn't go good. And then you get an email immediately that's like, what happened to the pink text branch deployment environment? I was using that. I was trying to link to that. And you're just like, sorry, we didn't.
That's a whole topic is the, what do you do? What is your branch management strategy? Because ours is like wait 6 months and then like have somebody post in Slack like, could everyone please clean up their branches because it's getting a little hairy in there and I don't know what's what anymore. And then
it's kind of like the office refrigerator.
There's some
whoever
carrots at the bottom of the fridge that are
feature branches. Whoever's stealing my feature branch, please stop.
Really smells like fish in the / feet branch.
Please don't put your fetch.8.2 branch in the microwave.
Passive aggressive branches.tumblr.com.
Yo, man, we should start that, dude. If you've got any, send them in, Shopomaniacs. We want to see them. Just like, Jeff asked for this. Feature / Jeff's big idea.
We'll file this in our good ideas folder.
Yeah, let's just oh man. All right.
Okay.
Hey, question number two. Hopefully that helped. All right. He asked about kids, and like, it's tough with kids. Your time is low. You got like, I burn the midnight oil. That's not for everybody, but I just try to.
I'm so the opposite right now. Just try to. They're down somewhere between like 6 and 8 p.m. and I go down with her. These are the early days.
That's your life. You should do that. Like, honestly, like 8 p.m. bedtimes is life. That's like, actually you're in a good state, but.
Yeah, and I'm to work by 6 a.m. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Daddy, that's D-A-D-I, .cloud. It's a global decentralized cloud services platform, like in the vein of AWS or Google Cloud Platform or Microsoft Azure or whatever, but not them. That would be a centralized platform. This is a decentralized platform, bringing control of the internet back to the people. You even pay for it with a cryptocurrency based on blockchain, like Bitcoin, or more accurately, in this case, Ethereum. There's a crowd sale coming up for the initial offering of this, these Daddy tokens, literally what you use to pay for these cloud services. It's coming up. It's the fastest growing crowd sale on Telegram, which is pretty darn cool. You can register for the crowd sale at daddy.cloud, of course. Again, it's decentralized hosting for web services, brings control of the internet back to the people, works in support of net neutrality. The technology is already there. It already exists. It's already powering over 200 websites and probably most significantly, it's up to 90% cheaper than other centralized platforms like AWS, Google Cloud Platform, and all that stuff. So it's a lot cheaper and it's a lot decentralized. So if you're picking infrastructure for a new thing, this feels a lot like it's faster because of the distributed nature of the network, which is pretty darn cool. Over 25,000 people are already registered to be investors as part of this public sale. Check it all out at daddy.cloud. We got Pete Locke here asking about something we won't have an answer to. Web components. Hell yeah, we love these.
Shoot.
Really great intro to the overarching concept back in episode 276. I was wondering how responsive design will work with them and how media queries will work in a context where the size of the component should depend on the context it's rendered into. So do you think the uptake of web components is actually going to be reliant on container queries? I don't know. I would think container queries and web components are, I can see the relation. And they are related, but not entirely. You know, like we'd much rather see container queries in the scope of just available in all CSS. I think that would be cool to see it ship just with web components, just because any implementation of container queries would be amazing. But we're hoping for a wider release of that. Although I don't have the traction. I see a little thing pop up once in a while, a little thread, but I don't think there's any like actual takes on it. And of course, anytime anybody brings it up, they're like, don't you know there's 10 JavaScript libraries and don't you know about JavaScript and CSS? And I don't know. But nah, we want it in CSS. Raw, baby, raw.
Yeah, I think, this actually, not to be a wet blanket, but I think this web components may act in its current state may actually go against like getting a CSS solution. But let's talk about container queries real quick. There's been a movement in the responsive images community group or responsive issues community group. Who is a part of the W3C, or is he part of the HTML working group? I don't know.
Remember,
but they've decided to pick up the issue of container queries. And there's kind of the theory here is this is a developer advocated feature. And they, in order to get it moving and get it some more traction, they've decided to like pick it up and it's on the slate of things to talk about at TPAC or whatever that event is. So container queries or element queries or whatever it's going to be called, there's also a whole naming issue you can join, is picking up steam. The thing, like historically with container queries, is it was always shut down by like, oh, well, we need, once we get containerization, you know, like contain all or contain cover, you know, kind of like object fitty kind of things, but like, you know, contain overflow X or whatever. Once we get that, then we'll do look at container queries. Or once we get resize observer, then we'll do container queries. Or once we get this, you know, so it, we all, the buck got passed on container queries, but it looks like now it's in a state to actually get talked about. So that's really good.
I can't remember when I called it. It must have been like five episodes or so. I think I premonished that by the end of 2018, there'll be some kind of, it probably won't be like shipping or anything, but there'll be some kind of like thing to play with. There'll be significant progress in real world.
I hope so. That would be awesome. And like web components is, you're absolutely right. It like is perfect because if you think of like the calendar component, you want it to be a very different calendar, almost like a list view when it's in a sidebar, but you want it to be a full calendar.
Yeah, I literally don't care what container. The size of the browser window is. I care what size the calendar is. My God.
So like that's just basic. Like that's the most basic example. Is
even
like,
if it's full screen, it'd be like, oh, I changed the padding on the outside of the calendar from 1 rem to 2 rem. Oh, I got to change my media query because that kind of affects how big the calendar inside of it is. You know, it's like, it's stupid that the media queries we have to write are targeted to a specific component, but the only option we have is to infer that from our layout and how big the browser window is. I mean, if people are wondering why it's a big deal, I think the sentiment that a lot of people repeat is if there were container queries, 90% of the media queries I write would be container queries and not browser window width or height or anything related to the browser window. It would be related to the element itself. I think that's 100% true.
Nope, I think so too. I think like, yes, very suited. But the current state of web components is right now, all in JS is really the only way to do web components because other browsers, Mozilla most notably, said no to HTML imports. There is at github.com/w3c/web components/issues/246, I think, or 265, is a HTML modules discussion, which is kind of, it was supposed to be the HTML imports discussion. How do you like write, how do we make a HTML import system that leverages the ES6 like modules system? Like that was kind of the discussion, but that has kind of devolved, as I understand it, into a, how does JavaScript suck up HTML discussion? Like basically how do we replace JSX kind of like, how do we get HTML templates in JavaScript?
Which is kind of like,
bummed.
I don't know.
I'm bummed out by that. I don't care. I don't care. I want HTML imports. And there's this argument that like, because HTML, or like because custom elements take a little bit of bootstrapping, like define element and then it relates to a class, that they should just be JavaScript anyway, like the HTML like single file like view component single file component sort of system like doesn't actually do much, you know, it just is like it's sort of a visual nicety, you know, because you're doing it all in JavaScript anyway. However, Dave Rupert is still very passionate that I would like to build a website using HTML. Like, can I just build a goddamn website using HTML? So I'm going to keep fighting over on that issue or prodding people because I actually have a blog post probably coming out today because I have it mostly written. But it's just like JavaScript's really expensive and on the main thread and we're crowding the main thread. But the only solution for modular web design, which helps out with this whole, you know,
it really dead like, though. Isn't the only reason it's dead is because Mozilla didn't say we don't like it. They said we have other things to prioritize before we get to this, and we don't have it. And the fact that we don't have it, I understand, blocks you, but it's not because we fundamentally.
They said it's too hard, you know, and I think they're on their Bugzilla, it was kind of like they're hitting bugs. They're saying it's too hard, but they've solved module loading with ES6 modules, or in theory, that's been solved. But their whole thing was like, we don't want to do the HTML because we're seeing an uptick. This was 5 years ago or something, but they're like, we see an uptick in JS framework usage. So we think like the way we view web components will be different. And lo and behold, because they didn't do it, there's a little bit of a survivor bias there, but because they didn't do it, they're like,
see, we were right.
We were right. Everyone's using React now. And so it's just sort of like, well, anyway.
Okay, I get it. This is a good rant. We'll do it again in a couple episodes.
I'll keep talking. This will be my rant for the rest of my life. But all that to say is, if web components are only all in JS, which I feel like they currently only are, you can do container queries. Like you can do like this.width or whatever, viewport.width or something. You know, you can query the width. It's probably not performant, but you can query the width and then kind of set a style variable or whatever based on that. You know, like there are like kind of, you know, if you're in JavaScript, you can query it, you know, but what we want to do is like get that width, that component width based on CSS. So anyway, that's it.
So let's end this with, we got maybe a few minutes, right? We don't want to go too long here. This is just another one.
Two whole questions.
I like the idea of like dropping some topics on people, maybe engage some discussion. Maybe we should follow up better with that on the show, as well as in the comment section on the website and Twitter and stuff if we can. But it was this idea that, just because this was like my yesterday, was observing this to some degree. And there's this idea, you know, like everybody's aware, like sometimes websites go down and stuff. It was in the year being like a fake news debacle or whatever. I don't even want to get into that. But we're all aware that the problems happen on websites. And then like, where does that responsibility lie on fixing it? And it's mostly my empathy for all the people that are in a role or position as a web worker that is a first responder to stuff like that. And it's like, I almost should think there's like, should be like a thank you day to all the like server people and DevOps people that do that. And I spoiled the surprise there, but that's the role that are the first responders to this thing. They have this job in which that things can go wrong on websites for all kinds of really exotic and weird and unforeseen circumstances. And it's their job to figure out what it is and like have immediate action for figuring it all out. And, you know, we just had a weird one at CodePen that it didn't just drop overnight, or sometimes it happened. It was like this, you know, 4 days ago, people started seeing a couple like interesting 404s. And I was like, I started to see them too. And then we like saw a tweet about it and we're like, we got to watch this. What's going on? You know, it's tempting to be like, I don't know, it's just network quirk. Something is weird. And they started to ramp up a little bit and really went off. And it just felt bad for Tim, who's essentially like, that's his job to suss out and figure that out. And he's like, this is just weird. I don't get it. You know, like there's no reason that our response to that particular URL for our system should be serving a 404. But of course, we all know that when a URL hits your stack or your world at all, like the journey of it, even to get there across the network, is very weird. And there's lots of things involved. And then once it hits your stack, depending on how complicated it can be incredibly complicated, like what ultimately serves the response for that. And, you know, there's no need to go into the intricacies of what happened there, but it's like, my God, what a stressful thing. And then compare that to me, who's on a totally different area on the spectrum. Is very rarely does a web emergency like that need a front end dev. Maybe some JavaScript people here and there, if it's a bug that was shipped because JavaScript is complicated and maybe they need to step in to fix it. And, you know, less, even more rarely, an HTML CSS person needs to be on call for a 2 a.m. emergency. And probably never does like just somebody who's just in a design role ever shoulder any of the burden of an emergency. Maybe I'll leave you with that, or leave Dave.
No, I think that's awesome. I think like that idea of first responder is very, very awesome. I not to take away people who fight real fires and you know, you know, deal with real bad guys. But like when it's a very stressful and traumatic situation, if you're the person on the hook for when the money-o-meter starts going down, because, you know, at right. your organization, if that money-o-meter starts going down, a lot of people get very upset. Even if it goes down like a tick, people start like knocking on your door, like, what's going on? Or sending you emails like, we got to get this story out. You know,
hopefully like that's people who like called out, though, that that's part of your responsibility. It's not just like an extra thing that you have to wear, that we're aware of that. When we hire you in this role, you are the server person, but you're also this emergency responder. And hopefully the pay is commensurate with that, or there's some kind of overtime or something. I just think that's it's an important thing to know. And I think when you're when you're hiring or being hired for that role, that's a big thing to talk about. We had an interview with somebody not so long ago that really clearly wanted to know that. They had a history of working in a role where it was a dream job. They loved the job so great, couldn't be a better company or product, but the on-call killed them. They're just like, I was 24/7 and I couldn't handle it. And I'd like to know that in this role, that is more scoped out. Like I don't need none of it, even though that would be awesome if there was none of it, but I need to be on call less than half the time, or ideally much less than that.
No, I think that's totally valid, you know, it's just like, hey, I'm working here. I'm not like giving my life, you know, I'm not a founder,
right.
You know, like, so like either compensated as such for that kind of vulnerability, or like, or the buck doesn't stop with them, or whatever, you know, I kind of have this like, not fantasy is the wrong word, but I just like, I have these dreams of like an office space where if you are like a firefighter, you like actually wear like firefighter clothes. You wear like a blue shirt, tight shirt with like yellow suspenders, red pants, and like you have a little walkie talkie on your shoulder. And if something goes wrong, you like have to, like in a meeting, you get a call over your walkie-talkie. It's very loud and disruptive to everybody in the meeting. And you say, I'll be right there. And you like put on a fireman hat and you like go walk down and like kind of like where people dress up as their roles. So like if you see a bunch of people in fire hats huddled over a computer, you know, they're fighting a fire. Don't mess with them. Like just let them figure it out, or like, you know, like let that happen. Don't disrupt them. Or like if somebody, I kind of like on the other side, like somebody wearing like coveralls, like a janitor, like just I mop up messes. I'm like fixing code. I'm a janitor this week. Like I want this jumpsuit actually for myself. Like just like I'm plunging toilets and, you know, cleaning things up this week. And that's what, so I'm wearing this outfit. This is all based on my living in Japan for 3 years, which is Japan's very uniform based. So I think in an office environment, this would be really
uniforms cool. For the job you're currently doing. Let's talk Halloween next time, people. Or, I mean, that's not what Dave's saying. He's saying day to day, but you know what I mean? It'd be fun.
Day to day. No, cosplay at work. All right. Hey, Chris, we should wrap this up. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. I have a new podcast at Aside Quest. Forgot to mention that at @aside_quest. You can check that out. It's a video games podcast for people who are too busy to play video games. You might like it if you're a web dev. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. People want to hire people like you and Chris. Do you got anything else you'd like to say?